everybody. Welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. And this time we're going to talk about some creepy ass spiders as picked by me. 1990s Arachnophobia with one of the most all-star casts we've had on Horror Movie Night in reference to two actors and then the old lady from Happy Gilmore.
And Mimi. I wonder if there's something in her contract where she has to wear that outfit. Because I feel like everything she's in, she wears that ridiculous outfit.
It might just be her actual clothes. You ever think about that?
There's no wardrobe for Mimi?
No. I had a fun experience watching this movie for two reasons. Reason number one was that I watched it with a group of friends last night. But reason number two is that we were watching my DVD, which is one of the first DVDs that I ever bought, which means that it scratched to shit. So it kept skipping to different scenes. So the movie, I definitely missed at least two sequences in this movie due to the scratched up DVD and having to like move forward. But I have seen this movie enough times that I got the gist of what was going on. So let's talk about it. Can't imagine that this was the first time watch for any of us.
No, but it sure felt like it. I mean, I haven't seen this movie since.
Oh, yeah. I have a note about that, too. I was like, yeah. I have forgotten everything that happens in this movie except for one thing.
What was the one thing for you?
Oh, it's the Kinder trauma for me, if you want to get into it.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Well, first of all, did you say that you picked this? Because, I mean...
Yeah, no, I 100%... I mean, I feel like it's pretty obvious if you were to... Try to guess who picked what movies. If it involves a giant animal, it's probably Matt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Kinder trauma part for me was when they find the mortician and his wife and they're dead and then the spider comes out of his nostril.
Oh, okay. So the thing that I always remembered about this movie that was like one of the things that kind of freaked me out the first time I watched it, and I watched this at our neighbor's house, Jay. I would go to Jay's house a lot, and his dad had like a weird assortment of movies, but Arachnophobia was one of them. And he was like, oh, you got to watch it. It's really good. I was probably 8 or 9 when I watched it, maybe even younger. It was that kind of the opening scene, but it's when they pan down to like the sucked dry corpse inside the
coffin. Yeah.
Like I kept watching, but I remember that always stuck out as like that kind of freaked me out as a kid. But like not enough to like,
not to deter you.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, like not like, that I like ran out of the room when like Christopher Lloyd's eyeballs fell out and I didn't know how that movie ended for like 10 years. But this one I kept watching because I was trying to look cool in front of my older neighbor.
And I completely forgot about the fact, well, one, I had forgotten that Julian Sands was in this movie. I think Julian Sands forgets that he was in this movie because he has the most ignominious death probably ever in anybody's career.
Dude, it's so good. The flying ass spider.
Yeah, I love how he's like, it's dinner time or whatever, or dinner is served, and then he literally gets eaten. Like, it's just so fucking dumb. But, yeah, like, I completely forgot about how the spiders got to America. And I was like, oh, okay. This is an odd movie, just in general. Like, it's not really horror, and I it's fine. It's close enough for us to talk about it, but it just feels more like...
It's a feel-good horror.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where my double feature comes into play.
Ooh, I wonder if we have the same one. I'm going to hold off on saying what mine is as well, but...
If your double feature is Jaws, then yes.
No, it's not that.
No.
I think me and Matt might have the same one, so I might have to think of a backup.
I think so too, but we'll find out. I think that this movie is in that same vein of what was going on in like 1990 to like 1992. Which was big budget studios kind of doing these throwbacks to like 50s horror a little bit.
I can already fucking tell. I'm pissed. This episode is ruined.
But like this movie is absolutely them like doing an homage to like old 50s dumb horror movies. But like everyone's in on the joke. Like you can tell that everyone's having a good time doing this movie because they know that they're not making any important statement or anything. It's just... Like Brian said, a feel-good horror. Like, it's just, it tickles all the right spots that it's supposed to get to. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I was feeling so infuriated when Jeff Daniels is having the meeting with the doctor who told him he was retiring, and he, like, upheaved his entire life to this town to replace this guy, and he's just like, yeah, I decided I'm not going to retire. And he's like, but you promised me. He's like, well... Things change, that old man.
I don't know if it's the era, you know, the time period I was born, or the family I grew up with, but my very first experience with Jeff Daniels was Dumb and Dumber.
Yep, same.
Everything else he's in, it's just like a sequel to Dumb and Dumber to me. You know? I don't know about Scott. I can speak for Matt. I think the all-star of this movie is John Goodman.
Oh, absolutely.
That's oh, no, 100%. Okay. But I will. Here's something to think about, because Jeff Daniels looks super, super young in this movie.
He does. Mm-hmm.
But 4 years later was Dumb and Dumber, and he, like, obviously there's some makeup going into making him look like a fucking heathen in that movie. But
he got,
like,
fat. That's it. Yeah, he like, just got fat.
But, like, man, it's like quite a transformation over 4 years to compare the two.
And then he did that one movie, The Career Killer, about geese. What? Jeff oh, Daniels, yes. His daughter, and geese.
Yeah. Fly away from home or whatever it is. They build like a Santa sleigh out of geese. Yeah.
Oh my God. You know, I think you guys are over exaggerating that being the career killer and not whatever that sanctimonious bullshit speech that like wannabe libertarians post all the time, where Jeff Daniels is like, well, this is what's wrong with American politics and blah, blah, blah.
Well, I mean, you could disagree with that speech, but I think that was like what restarted his career. Newsroom was like.
Oh, was that on? Is that what that's from?
Yeah, it's from Newsroom. I think it's the first episode of Newsroom.
It's the worst thing ever. And it literally is the worst thing ever.
And they were just like, all right, Jeff, you're back. What do you want to do next? I want a sequel to Dumb and Dumber 2. Well, enjoy your resurrection of your career.
So, Brian, I know Scott will not know who this person is. He won't know why I'm so excited. But, Brian, did you get excited when you saw Lloyd the Cop?
I don't know who that was. It looked like Fat Paul Rubens.
No, you know who that is?
Oh, he's the sheriff. He's not a cop.
Whatever.
Who is
the
it?
The sheriff, Lloyd. It's the dork from Hollywood Nights. If I were, mother, if I were a rich man.
If I was a rich man. If I were, mother, if I were a rich man.
So I was trying to explain this to my friends because no one's heard of this movie except for Jim Kelly, who forced his kids to watch it all the time. But Hollywood Nights is like the Walmart version of American Graffiti mixed with Porky's.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, hey, it's like a bunch of dudes with hot rods, but they're constantly trying to find poon.
Yeah, I can see your dad using the word poon.
I didn't know that was it because it's obviously it's the 90s, so it wasn't.
Yeah,
it wasn't 12 Paul.
Years.
Yeah. Like, but Paul Rubin was recently on Jimmy Kimmel. And that dude in the 90s looks like 2020 Paul Rubens. It's very weird.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he's like short and fat. I don't know how he got shorter, but he somehow did.
So we were talking about John Goodman. And I was saying to someone that not only do I think that this character is my favorite John Goodman role, but I think that the introduction of that character might be one of my favorite introductions to a character in a movie. Like, just him just kind of walking around, just saying weird shit, trying to, like examine the house. There's the one scene where he's like, would anybody have any objections if I just tore out the entire floor? She's like, I wouldn't. He goes, false alarm then. And just keeps moving. She's like, well, then what's happening if it's not termites? Bad wood. What do you do with it? Put in good one.
He's definitely the thing that made me not hate rewatching this movie. Because movie is just so middle of the road. I've only seen it once before.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my litany. I've only seen it once before. I don't have a fear of spiders. My dad does. I don't like big animal movies like Matt does. I mean, I don't hate them. I just, you know, it doesn't do it for me. Although alligator's fucking awesome.
I was gonna say, it's not a selling point to a movie the way it is for
yeah,
me.
It's I mean, I'm not a world famous herpetologist with a great set of breasts. Like that.
Well, let's address the elephant in the room. Matt is a borderline Rain Man. So so he
can say autistic.
He only needs to watch a movie once. And it is forever ingrained in his brain. Therefore, it has nostalgic rewatch, regardless of how much time has passed. But for me and you, if we've seen it once as a kid, it doesn't have that nostalgia feel because we barely remember it.
Right. You're not wrong. I'm just like, it was a movie.
Yeah, I've seen it.
So I think for me, like, because I do agree, like, the movie hits a lot of, as you said, like, middle of the road stuff. Like, it's mostly, you know, a woman going to shut off a light, and, like, for a split second, you see a spider drop on her hand, and she yells, and then, you know, we continue on with the story of Jeff Daniels as Dr. Death. Like, you don't see a lot of the violence. You see the after effects of the violence.
Oh, no, and it's kind of cool because it's like a tableau kind of thing. I mean, I get it. I like it. But I think where what I didn't get as a kid, which really seemed so silly. It didn't bug me. It just seemed so silly watching it as an adult, was this like level of intelligence and vengeance that these spiders have. Or, makes no sense at all. I get it. This is Jaws with eight legs. I get it. It's the whole point. But when Jeff Daniels is paralyzed with fear at the very end, and the king spider or whatever, the general, I guess, when it's like crawling up his leg, there have been other times where they have immediately bitten somebody. This is revenge, so I gotta get up to his fucking face. No. Okay.
I think you're talking about, like, that is like nitpicky. If we want to talk about the real, like, this is insane how smart they're making the spider, is when Jeff Daniels is running around with a little homemade flamethrower, and the spider is running, and then just before Jeff Daniels shoots a flame at it, just stops and hides behind a piece of metal so that it goes around it, and then as soon as the flames are done, just keeps scurrying
down. I wouldn't even consider what Scott's saying nitpicky. Like, I don't think it's... I hate people that are like, oh, well, that is so unrealistic. But at the same time, if you have a whole movie where one little spider at a time is killing everyone, and then Jeff Daniels somehow maneuvers around hundreds...
Like, they're so fast, they drop from their webs, or, you know, their silk, so fast onto that lady's hand, and then they're just like, hey, go to the basement, hey, get out of here.
I love that scene at the same time, though, because it feels like for a split second the movie just turns into like any local haunted house attraction in October. Like, it's just like all the animatronic spiders drop at once, and you're just like, ooh! And then you keep going.
I'm cool with that. That makes me like it better.
The one thing that I thought, if we're talking about things that are ridiculous, we have to talk about the girl in the shower scene where she doesn't realize. I have no clue. Oh,
like, I rewatched that scene. So, yes, we're going to talk about the scene, but I had to rewatch it, not because there's a naked lady in it, but rather because I was like, am I supposed to know who this woman is?
No, not at all. But there's that scene where it's like the spider is on her face. The spider is going down her chest, but it's not until it hits her foot that she's like, oh, there's a spider in here.
I don't know. I personally, if it was on my nipple, I'd feel it more quickly than if it was on my toe.
I think if it was on my face, I'd be screaming already.
I've looked it up. I don't know if it's anxiety or not, but every night I have trouble sleeping because I feel bugs crawling on my face that aren't even there.
So I think that's like called withdrawal.
Well, 7 years later and still kicking it. But yeah, I would definitely notice a giant spider on my, sometimes my shirt tag just lightly brushes my neck, and I'm like, who's that? Who are you?
So I watched this show years ago. I never really even liked it that much, but it was just something to put on in the background when it was on Netflix. But did any of you guys watch the show Mythbusters when it was on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know Jamie with the big bushy beard?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His first job was building the spider at the end of this movie.
Oh, wow. That's so weird.
Yeah, that's like his first film credit is building the king spider that's at the end of this movie.
Well, the thing is that the king spider kind of they look like shit.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they're animatronic and not CGI, because this movie would be completely ruined if it was CGI. Although there is CGI on the outside of the house when the mom, kids, and John Goodman get outside when Jeff Daniels falls into the floor. Also, if you fell two stories down, you would not be like, ow.
Yeah, well, that was when I was watching it with my friends. They're like, I feel like he should be more hurt than that. And I said, I think the wine bottles broke his fall.
Yeah. What are you, a wet bandit? How do you survive a fall like that?
Anyway, so I think that the king spider looks stupid. Mm-hmm. I think that the egg sack looks fun. I mean, it
egg sack's cool, but the end got so ridiculous they should have just went over. They should have just pretty much made the King Spider like very similar to like Jabba the Hutt. And like that's how he defeats it. It's like he just like is arguing.
Chokes
with
it.
Like yeah, like yeah, with the chain. What do you want from our family? No, no, no.
I like the absurdity of like he sets it on fire and then this flaming spider jumps at him, but he shoots it with the nail gun and it flies into the egg sack. Like
very convenient.
I will say the other thing that was fun was watching it with my friend whose wife does have arachnophobia.
Yeah.
So I was being able to just live vicariously through her reactions every time a spider popped up on the screen. She was like, ah! Like, just screaming at herself.
That's so weird to me.
Oh, no, let's not phobia shame anybody.
I'm not phobia shaming people, but what are you, a dog? Like, my friend's wife is deathly afraid of snakes. But when she sees them on a television, she understands that that's on a television. Buddy races to every cat on the television. Trying to...
But like, the flip side is like, I used to kind of find spiders a little terrifying or whatever. Like they were like, oh, they're kind of creepy looking creatures. Then I started to have to deal with camel crickets, and spiders don't bother me anymore because camel crickets are horrifying looking.
Sprickets.
Yeah, sprickets they're also known as for spider crickets. They're
gnarly. Spider crickets?
Yeah, they're gnarly looking little dudes.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Imagine like 15 of those jumping at you every time you come downstairs to record a podcast.
But can they bite?
No, but they, like, you know how like most animals...
Oh, they're not, I saw a small picture of one. I was like, holy shit, that's terrifying. Yeah. I thought that their back legs were their front legs, but no, they're not so bad.
Yeah, I think the thing that's freaky about them is like, in most cases with like with an insect, you know, you yell at them or you stomp at them and they'll go away.
Get the fuck out of here.
They jump at you. So like, if you're going to like, you're like, oh my God, I'm going to step on this cricket and get rid of it. Normally they're like trying to run away. This one's just like, come on, motherfucker. And he like jumps at you and you're like, no.
This poor cricket.
Come on, motherfucker. Everybody's going to die. Come on, motherfucker. Everybody's going to die.
Basically, he's like, you want to fight? Let's fucking fight. It's like basically how like those things are when you're like trying to come at them.
Oh, man.
And my cheap ass parents, let's talk about this for a second. I love my parents, but my cheap ass parents won't pay for fumigation or anything to take care of this infestation. Their solution is just duct tape flipped upside down. So at all points of like the spricket season, there's just dead corpses duct taped to the floor that I have to step over because I can't move the tape yet because we don't know if we got them all yet.
Okay, that is... It's fucking wild. I feel like I've been talking to you every day for, what, 8 fucking years?
Yeah, oh my
and
God.
I find out more about your childhood and your upbringing that shines light on who you are as an adult every single day.
But yeah, so, I mean, the negative about talking about arachnophobia is that I think we've pretty much... talked about arachnophobia. We're 20 minutes in. I think we're done. I've got nothing else. You guys got anything?
I didn't even touch my notes. Let me look at my notes because I feel like I don't think there are any quotes that I have or anything like that. But like, I don't even know, man. Oh, I have a note at the beginning that says "bug with a vendetta," and it's because that guy gets like the King Spider. He has far too much intellect, as I said earlier, because it's like, okay, its planning is diabolical. It's like, okay, this guy found me in the forest floor. I'm not gonna kill him. I'm gonna kill the American, and I'm because he's already sick, and so it's gonna look like he just died of his fever. I'm gonna bite him on the hand, and nobody's gonna notice. And then I'm gonna get into his crate, get sent back to America. Fuck some American spiders.
Let's talk about that for a second, actually, because the spider's journey to Jeff Daniels' house is like crawls out of the coffin.
It's baby's day out.
Gets picked up by a crow, bites crow, crow dies.
And it doesn't die. It, like it, the King Spider doesn't die when it gets like it's a terminal velocity, you know? No. It's like this bird is up 100 feet and it then,
so it, look, the flip side is that that spider had already fallen from a giant tree in the Amazon, so I'll buy that it doesn't fall from a bird falling from the sky.
Okay.
But spider crawls off into the barn. Then they catch a house spider and they also put it in the barn. And we get this, like, weird Lady and the Tramp shot of the two spiders, like, meeting.
Yeah, and it's needed was like a little
all we needed was like a little animated heart to come up above their heads. Oh, that part made me laugh so hard. I'm like, oh, they're about to get down to fucking.
These insects are having more sex than I am.
Yep,
one can't involved. Spell insects without sex. Yes, you can.
Oh yeah, because there's no X.
I have two things to say about the casting in Arachnophobia, and then we're done, okay?
Okay.
The mom was actually in The House on Sorority Row.
Oh, shit.
Which is... I love how you're yawning. You're like, oh, shit. Yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, interesting, Scott.
When did Matt Kelly become Brian Kelly? Fucking playing Yahtzee while I'm trying to have a serious conversation. Jesus. Wait, let me do my impression of Brian.
You know what? I don't want to hear it. At least I have the common courtesy to do it here when I'm in my home and hope that you don't hear the keyboard. Let's not forget that Matt tried to secretly play games while we were in the same hotel room watching him.
Okay, the last thing I want to say is that I thought that Meatloaf Ade was in this movie, but no. It's this guy named Peter Jason who's a Kmart meatloaf.
Oh, they're the best kinds of meatloaves.
No, they're fuzzy.
Shut up, Mr. McGriddle.
Hey, guys, we're going to get into our double features on Arachnophobia in just a couple minutes. But first, while we're talking about giant killer spiders, let's talk about other insects. So, as you know, in the past, this show has been sponsored by Best Fiends. And guess what? We're sponsored by Best Fiends yet again. So, don't you slack on playing this game. I've continued to play this game. I've continued to stress out about this game. I'm actually currently stuck on a level that I've been playing for about 3 days, but I'm going to crack this level. I'm going to beat this level, and I'm going to continue to dominate this game until literally I've gotten further than the programmers have levels. That could take a couple years, but I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to nose to the grindstone. I'm going to keep moving, pushing forward, because it is a truly great game. But don't just take my word for it. All right? Engage your brain with the fun puzzles, collect tons of the cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. So download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. That's Friends Without the R, Best Fiends. And now back to the show.
All right, so I'll start because it's my pick. And Brian, I apologize if this is yours. But there's another movie that came out in 1990 that was a major studio doing an homage to 50s horror movies, and that's Tremors. So ooh. I'm going to do the double feature of this with Tremors.
Well, surprisingly, that's not my pick.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's actually, I mean, you know, if I wanted to watch Tremors, and I don't, but if I wanted to watch Tremors, this is how you do it, because this movie is the prequel.
Yeah.
Literally, they go to the end of the movie is them going to San Francisco or something like that, and then they're like, oh, it's just Tremors.
Yeah. All right, Brian, what's yours, since you were so terrified the whole time?
So I would watch this movie, and then I was done. I was like, you know, I'm still in the mood to watch another movie. So I call my friend JD, who was working at the old folks' home tonight, and he'd say, hey, we're showing a special screening of Cocoon. And I'd say, oh, cool. And I'd go over to the old folks' home and watch Cocoon with Jay-Z, with JD and all the old folks. Be a nice little bow to tie on my
neck. Do you really have a friend named JD, or are you talking about Jade?
Scrubs, right?
Scrubs, yeah. Oh. JD and Scrubs. That was like his movie he would always play at like this old folks' home and nobody would care.
Man, sometimes I feel like I'm missing out by not watching Scrubs, but then I just have you guys to give me all of the references, so I don't have to go watch it.
Just fill you in.
You'll
be like an expert.
I watched Garden State 4 times. I think I have all the Scrubs references I need.
Yeah, you don't. You would hate Scrubs. Too many feels. and Scrubs.
Yeah, that's exactly why I never watched it.
It's very emotional, and then it's very slapsticky. It's literally a combination of your two least favorite things.
Yeah.
All right, so Scott, what's your double feature? How are you going to save the night after Arachnophobia?
Now, here, let me qualify this, as I did not feel like I had... My night wasn't ruined by watching Arachnophobia. I just want you to know, like, it was okay. I didn't hate it.
But
I want to bring it up. You know, I want to really make my night a winner. So, if we're talking, I mean, Matt, you should be able to guess this. Do you want to take a guess at what my double feature with Arachnophobia would be?
I mean, I almost wrote Eight-Legged Freaks down. I'm wondering if that's what yours was going to be.
Am I ever going to watch Eight-Legged Freaks again?
No, that's why I'm so confused. You don't like spider movies.
No, that's why I'm so fucking confused.
Man, I'm pretty disappointed in everybody involved in this situation right now, because I would obviously be watching Ticks.
Ticks
is one of my... That is quite possibly my favorite bug movie.
That is true. And man, the tick at the end just looks like a better version of the spider at the end of this.
If you want to watch a creepy crawly movie, like, not a goofy movie, but a creepy crawly movie.
No, if you want to watch a goofy movie, check out our Patreon.
Okay. I'm done.
All right. So does anybody have anything that they saw that they want to talk about? So I spent a long week of just hitting up movies, and I saw two movies. They're kind of I haven't been really staying on top of 2020 movies. The only movie I'd seen so far was Underwater. So I was like, let me try to get caught up on a few of the other things that came out. Like, January and February are kind of a dumping ground still. So it wasn't a lot to pick from. I saw one movie that I thought was really good, and one movie that really depends on what you're wanting to see when you go to see it to determine if you're going to like it. So I'll start with that. Birds of Prey. So I said that Birds of Prey feels like if Rob Zombie was to direct Boondock Saints. And what I meant by that is that the humor and kind of the general pace of the movie is very Boondock Saints-esque, as it's like a bunch of different people kind of coming together for one common villain. One of them's a cop, like, and it's just like characters that kind of remind me of the Willem Dafoe character, and it's very hyper violent, and it's these very over the top heists to kill these different people. But then it's got this Rob Zombie thing where it's like hyper focused on blonde character with an annoying voice, which
okay, now I get it.
But then it keeps going off into these weird, like, fantasy sequences and, like, feels very, like, Rob Zombie-esque in the movie. The negative of the movie is that Harley Quinn is super obnoxious in the movie, and I can't stand her. And she's, like, 75% of the movie, but literally the other 25% of the movie where she's not in is awesome. Like, if they just did a spin-off movie with Huntress and Black Canary, I would watch the shit out of it. Huntress is awesome in this movie, and Ewan McGregor is crazy as the villain. So, like, those things worked for me. It was just the rest of the movie that was really hurting it, which was 75% of it. But then what I saw that I thought was great was The Gentlemen, which is like Guy Ritchie's kind of return to, like, Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch style film.
I'm gonna stop you there. Please don't sell anyone on this movie. Do not mention anything that happens in this movie, because I want to see it so bad.
All I'll say is that I don't think that this movie is going to... Come Oscar season, this movie won't be nominated for much, but I genuinely think it could get nominated for, like, a Best Editing Award, because the editing in it is, like, really... It's one of those movies that hinges on how unique the editing style is. And so I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the framework of the movie. I enjoyed the whole concept, and, you know, it's very funny. It's a funny movie. So definitely go check it out if you liked his old movies from before he was doing, like, Aladdin and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Sherlock Holmes.
But dude, Sherlock Holmes is such a good movie.
No, I'm not saying anything against those, but I'm saying, like, those are very family-friendly versions of what he was very good at, which was, like, the hard R, like, you know, blood just splattering everywhere and people just saying, like, fucking hell all the time.
It's good. I am looking forward to, I'm just waiting for the reviews on Birds of Prey. I actually already know what they're going to be, and it's going to be great. Now come Comic-Con season, there's going to be a bunch of fat girls dressed as Harley Quinn. And it's going to be quoted by...
Oh, Matt, you better edit this out.
Let me finish. Yeah. You ruined the bit now. Now we have to edit it out.
Which also, like, there already are. I don't know how this is changing anything.
So the punchline was it was going to be quoted by fat guys dressed as Negan, but let's just cut the whole thing.
I think I'm going to leave the whole thing even with the Scott interruption because I think it somehow improved your punchline by the disappointment in you saying it.
I'm sorry. It's the snowflake in me.
Shit.
I watched a new docuseries that is on HBO, McMillions. And
oh, I've heard great things about
dude,
that.
I had to look up.
Is that talking about the scratch-off?
Yeah.
Con? Yeah.
But the guy who I immediately went and followed, the guy who directed and edited, he's got like 100 followers on Twitter, which pisses me off because without a doubt, this is the coolest documentary edit. It is so similar to, speaking of gentlemen, it is so similar to Guy Ritchie editing a documentary.
Huh.
And just the tone, like, it is, I'm blown away. This guy is my new idol. Like, he's the official bar of everything that I try to accomplish. Is the bar is set that I'll never reach. It is, I cannot hype this up enough. Like, I've been trying to figure out a way to get in contact with him just to give him my praises. It's so fucking good.
He has 100 followers, Brian. Just follow him and then send him a message.
I did follow him, but I don't know how to send him a message. It's like when I met Jade, I just kept typing things out and then deleting it.
But hey, looked at how it worked out for you, so.
No, that's stupid. Hey.
I guess that's a very, like, Matt Kelly thing of, like, just add him and then message him, because, like, that's pretty much how I do all of my podcast business, and sometimes it works. It's just that 90% of the time they never talk to me.
Yeah. Matt does the spray and pray method. So when everybody, like, when he starts his podcast business, people are gonna be like, so how did you do it? And he's gonna be like, well, strap in, because it's gonna be a long, long ride.
Yeah. You have to have zero shame
and a lot of free time.
Yeah, and not be afraid to be told no all of the time.
Is that did you watch anything else, Brian, that you want to talk about?
I'm just gonna save it for next week.
Okay, now this is the point of the show. Okay, guys, I told you.
You warned us. I'm ready.
I warned you, but I'm gonna warn the listener. If you don't want to get into something serious, this can be the end of the episode for you.
Yeah, tune in next week.
Because and this is like a trigger warning. If you have like PTSD from sexual assault, probably want to turn it off here. For the rest of you that may want to listen to this, I want to talk about Miss Americana. Now, did you guys watch it?
No,
I did not know.
So Megan and I watched it. And then after we got done, we had a really serious conversation because it got me thinking about when she was sexually assaulted. I asked for permission and consent from her to talk about it on the show. And I'm not going to say the name of the offender, but this is probably one of the greatest shames of my adult life, is not doing something about this. But we're at a show. The show is over and we are tearing down. And a bandmate of one of my bandmates, so, you know, we shared a member, comes up to Megan and full hand grabs her vagina, and she was like, get the fuck off of me, or something. I mean, she like was like shocked, and he was like super drunk apparently. I didn't know anything about it. I was on the other side of the venue. She told him off and she was like, you cannot touch people like that. And he was like, I'm so sorry. And then like he sent her this non-apology Facebook message the next day when he sobered up and was like, I'm so sorry, I was so drunk, and like I'm blah blah whatever. And she was like, okay, well, just don't touch me ever again. 4, 5, 6 months later, we're playing a show again, and it's actually the farewell show of the member that we shared in the two bands. You know, everybody's saying good night, because we were the headliner, and you know, so we're tearing down again. He comes up to Megan and like gets a running start and smacks the shit out of her ass. Like super hard, like a welt. She turns around and screams at him to get the fuck away from her. And there were like 4 people around her, and he's like drunk again. And he's like, this is how I act with all of my female friends. Oh, by the way, this fucker is a female rugby coach. Still is. We should have pressed charges the first time. We didn't. we should have pressed charges the second time. We didn't. Because after he smacked your ass that second time, Megan screamed at him. He came out to me and he was like, yo, Megan's really mad at me. I was like, what did you do? He was like, I just went up and said hi to her. I was like, you should have left her alone. He like fucking whitewashed it too. And I never did anything about it. And I feel like a fucking pussy. Should have done something. And it just drives me insane sometimes when I think about it. I don't think about it often. But the way that this plays into Miss Americana is that Taylor Swift got dragged so... First of all, I don't understand the hatred people have for Taylor Swift. She's just a pop singer, first of all. And she writes all of her own music. Or at least she is a songwriter for all of her own music. She has help and producers. But like... she has had a shitload of hits that she has written herself or had help writing. Taylor Swift got dragged super hard by the internet because she came out against this guy for sexual assault. And they were like, well, why didn't you say something beforehand? And it's the same thing. Like fucking, you know, 6 years later, what am I going to do about this serial offender? You know, I'm positive that she's not the only person that he has molested, assaulted. Yeah. You know, like, because one of them was sexual assault and one of them was legit assault. Like, he came up and he basically punched her in the ass cheek. I think that Miss Americana is a really good documentary. It really endeared me to Taylor Swift because I really knew nothing about her life. Don't usually have a lot of empathy for ultra famous people because I'm like, you know, you're getting paid to a lot of fucking money to make art or to, you know, to perform. But at the same time, they don't get to have a normal life. And yeah. And also, everything they do is discussed by knuckle draggers on the internet. That's why I don't have a Twitter. I appreciate you guys letting me talk about it because there's no catharsis for me. I'm always going to be upset about this in respect to my fucking wife because I can never fix it. But at least talking about it, you know, is something.
You know, there's probably going to be people who are listening and are like, why the fuck are they talking about this on a comedy horror podcast? But I think that it's important that we have a platform that we make, you know, we make a stand every once in a while for stuff like that. It's, you know, not to like plug our own shit, but it's part of the reason why I am going to insist that we never don't have Survivor Girl shirts and that we continuously use that shirt platform to like help also raise money for different types of situations, because you know we need to be good allies to our female friends and just in general, but also because, man, the toxic masculinity that you find at a metal show is not very different than the toxic masculinity you find at a horror show.
Yeah, and there's if you go to a con, there's a lot of dudes wearing Cannibal Corpse shirts that have, you know, women with their insides slit and their legs spread. I mean, there's a thin line between being edgy and being a fucking asshole. You know, I feel like so much of death metal, especially like the more extreme stuff like Cannibal Corpse and basically bands that want to be like Cannibal Corpse and slam bands and all that shit, there are certain dudes who take that shit seriously. You know, like they're like, yeah, women are inferior, or, you know, their ultimate fantasy is to have a woman who is sexually subservient to them, you know, and so consent doesn't even play into their like sexuality, which is fucking insane to me. But I am not going to apologize for talking about this here because this is the biggest platform that I, as a just some random dude on the internet, has. Yeah, I can post about this on Facebook. And maybe 200 people will see it. But I know our numbers on Horror Movie Night, and I know that even if the vast majority of them turned off when I said this is a trigger warning, I feel so, like, as far as, like, using a term that is questionable in this situation, I feel impotent about women who are sexually assaulted. And we need to have a dialogue about it. We need to try and sensitize men who love horror into understanding that women are not objects, because it's so frustrating. And then people are going to call us snowflakes or don't take it so seriously. It's just horror. But like, if you spend your entire free time, like hours a day watching women in positions of subservience and men in positions of power, like most slasher films, it's going to, there's the possibility that it poisons your mind. Yeah. So you got to talk about it. I'm done.
All right. Well, I don't think that it would be appropriate to jump into the upbeat, happy outro this week. So tune in next week.
We will have
more horror movie night.
Have a much lighter week next week.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.